It's 20 minutes to 9. Back to your call shortly. Paul Horvath is a sports lawyer and has joined us a few times over the journey. It's been a long journey on this issue, and Paul's taken our call again. Paul, thank you very much for your time. Are you with us, Paul?
Yes,
from sportslawyer.com.au. What were you, just before we go into the detail, what were you expecting today?
Well, I guess my gut feeling was that the players would be cleared, because I felt that the comfortable satisfaction test that was found through the AFL's anti-doping tribunal was a very strong finding. And I think on a legal analysis, it seemed to me that there were key pieces of evidence that were missing, and that's particularly the case without key witnesses giving evidence, including Shane Charters, Nima Alavi, and Mr. Dank. So that left out key pieces of evidence. And then, I guess, to use non-legal language, what I guess the Court of Arbitration for Sport was able to do was to fill in the gaps, and that's really what you call a circumstantial case. You say the signs point to this, but you haven't got, you know, the exact information of someone seeing the product and substance of thymosin beta-4 being produced, carried, given and injected to a player. It's the signs look that way, and the Court of Arbitration for Sport said, well, based on the comfortable satisfaction test, we feel that we can fill in the gaps enough based on the information that all of the signs are so strong that that's what they intended to do, that we believe that that's what they did.
So is it simple to say, Paul, that the World Anti-Doping Agency and Richard Young just presented a better case this time around?
I think in simple terms, yes. That's got to be the case, because, you know, in any case that's presented, the person that presents the strongest argument that persuades the three members that are hearing the case generally win the case. So on the one hand, that's true. But on the other hand, what the panellists did themselves was that they, I've read, lowered the comfortable satisfaction test, the bar. They've lowered the bar on that test from the way that the AFL's anti-doping tribunal viewed it. So I guess there was both of those components involved.
Paul, just from an Essendon Football Club point of view, and you know, there's a lot of talk about now players suing the football club. Will this bury the football club, or can the football club survive this?
Look, I guess I'm a bit of an optimist in the sense that I would be staggered if it would bury the football club. Mm-hmm. Like and I don't think it's being optimistic either, because I think it's in the AFL's interest to make sure that we navigate these waters. And obviously the whole AFL system relies now broadcast deals on having 18 teams and so on. So obviously this is a massive hiccup in that landscape, and obviously we've got to look for top-up players for a period of 12 months. I think that one of the questions is the extent to which the AFL will underwrite or contribute to any legal claims. And we know that Lockie Hunter commenced a claim something in the order of 6 months ago against the AFL. And having done that, I guess he's in the box seat now to move forward with his claim against the AFL, because he and the other, 23 odd other players who are not on the Essendon list, they are unable to play for the next, season, just like the AFL players at Essendon as well. So they've got direct consequences in terms of income and so on. Whether they were playing in the VFL or the Murray, Ovens and Murray League, or wherever it is, they've got that loss of income, and then that also impacts their future incomes.
Paul, I think you've had the chance to read through the findings, and we've obviously been on air taking calls, so we haven't. But the 12-month penalty, even some of the experts yesterday were saying if Essendon is found guilty, 3 months would be on the higher scale. Why 12 months?
Look, I guess the Court of Arbitration for Sport is a fairly independent type of sports court, which is based out of Switzerland. firstly. And so, as you may or may not be aware, the World Anti-Doping Code's created by the Olympic movement, and then the AFL must follow it. So then you have this independent body, which is European-based, that then seeks to apply, amongst other things, importantly, the World Anti-Doping Code fairly and uniformly around the world. So what the chairman, Michael Beloff, I read briefly in one comment, he said, well, the players didn't cooperate and give assistance and so on as they might have, so they didn't get any of those discounts. And so the panel of European-based judges said, well, we can't see any reason for varying from the higher end of the penalties. Mm. So if you have no fault or negligence, you get down to potentially a zero ban. Here, as I understand it, the finding is that they had no significant fault or negligence. In other words, the players didn't specifically know and indeed believed, having signed some forms, that they weren't taking banned substances, and that's why the 12-month penalty applied as opposed to the 2 years.
Right.
And so I guess what the court's saying is no additional discount is warranted. So you can reduce down to 6 months if you're fully cooperative and provide information that leads to and assists in prosecution of different people in the process, whether that in this case be a Stephen Dank or perhaps a club official or what have you. And the court said none of that applied, and therefore we don't see any basis for reducing the 12 months other than the 4 months that had applied to, was pre-season last year. And then beyond that, in the Cronulla cases in Sydney, the court there gave further reductions because they said there were delays in the case. And as soon as the players were offered the bans, they took it straight away.
And they plead guilty as well.
Exactly. And my understanding is that those penalties had to be approved by the World Anti-Doping Code, and that makes World Anti-Doping Authority. And that makes sense because if WADA weren't happy with those penalties that were given to the Cronulla players, they could have appealed those penalties as well, which they didn't do.
Just, you said there were some comments there that they the Court of Arbitration for Sport said that the players didn't cooperate. Well, they obviously did cooperate with interviews and that sort of thing. Are you talking about the legal action that the Essendon Football Club took?
Look, I haven't read the whole decision, but that's the tenor of the comment that I read in an online Age article. I haven't read the decision itself either.
Yep. Okay, and as for the Brownlow Medal, we're getting lots of questions on that. That is an AFL decision, is that correct?
That's my understanding, and I've had a brief look at the rules in the past, and I think there's some discretion over it, but my gut feeling is that that would certainly be open to being revisited.
All right. Paul, thanks for taking our call and giving us some of your time.
It's a pleasure.